Hello, this is Kendra Brodine, founder and CEO of WomenLawyersOnline.com. And today I am thrilled to introduce you to Lori Gray. And I'll read a little bit here about Lori. She's got a very interesting biography, and so I'd like to share that with you before we bring Lori onto the call. And as an experienced trial attorney and teacher, Lori Gray is the founder of Socratic Parenting, LLC, which can be found at www.socraticparenting.com. Ms. Gray graduated from Goshen College in 1986 with a BA in Spanish Secondary Education and a minor in English Education. She spent her junior year abroad at the University of Barcelona in Spain and also completed a study service term in Costa Rica. From 1986 through 1990, Ms. Gray worked as a Spanish teacher and foreign language chair at Whitco High School in South Whitley, Indiana. She also coached basketball, volleyball, and academic teams, and spent summers working as an interpreter in Guatemala. While teaching, Ms. Gray met her first husband, a tall, dark, and handsome Sikh from Malaysia. It was he who suggested that she go to law school so that she could get paid to argue all day long and perhaps be a little nicer in the evenings. It didn't save the marriage, but it was the best unsolicited advice Ms. Gray ever received. Ms. Gray received her Doctorate of Jurisprudence from Indiana University School of Law in Bloomington in 1993 and began practicing as a civil attorney. Her private practice included personal injury, both plaintiff and insurance defense, workers' compensation, both plaintiff and defense, medical malpractice, plaintiff only, and labor and employment, defense only, immigration, criminal defense, and court-appointed guardian ad litem or attorney for parent in numerous CHINS, which is Child in Need of Services, cases. Ms. Gray has served as an author and lecturer for various Indiana continuing legal education programs. She co-chaired the Women Lawyers section of the Allen County Bar Association in 1998. Ms. Gray completed civil mediation training in 2003 and has served as a court-appointed Spanish-English interpreter in both state and federal courts. While in private practice, Ms. Gray met her current husband, Frank Gray, who is also a trial attorney. Lori Gray joined the Allen County Prosecutor's Office in Fort Wayne, Indiana in 2000 as a full-time deputy prosecutor, Felony Sex Crimes Division. After completing sexual assault response team training and childhood trust forensic interview training in March of 2000, she worked extensively with the multidisciplinary team at the Child Advocacy Center in Fort Wayne. After the birth of her daughter in 2001, Ms. Gray returned to the prosecutor's office as a part-time deputy prosecutor assigned to the Allen County Drug Court Intervention Program and Juvenile Sex Offenses. As the only local prosecutor who was fluent in Spanish, Ms. Gray also worked as an interpreter in a capital murder case and translating documents on multiple extradition cases. Ms. Gray left the prosecutor's office in April of 2010 to devote herself more fully to her work as an author, child advocate, and motivational speaker. She has served on the faculty of the National Symposium on Child Abuse in Huntsville, Alabama in 2009 and 2010. She is the co-creator of Token of Change, a self-transformational tool, and a consultant for the women's empowerment group Sophie's Cafe. She is the author of a young adult novel called Summer Sanctuary, which it sounds like is coming out in May here as published by Luminous Books. So, Lori, I am just so grateful for your presence here today with me, and I look forward to having this conversation with you.
Thanks, Kendra. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. And you just have such, as I reread that, such an amazing, diverse background that I hope we get to hear a little bit more about.
Jack of all trades, ace of none.
Well, it sounds like an ace of a few as well. But, all right. Well, Lori, why don't we just jump right in to the questions that we have decided to talk about, and we'll have a conversation around those. And so the first is, I'm wondering if you always have felt like you were adept or capable of the work-life balance, of juggling that personal and professional, or if a pivotal point came in your career or your personal life where you made a very conscious decision to become a better balancer, so to speak, or to really be more intentional about the way you created your personal and professional success.
I would have to say that I have not always been adept at balancing work and life, and that February of 2001 would be a really pivotal point in my life where things changed. and I had to kind of reevaluate and decide what I wanted to do. I mean, I grew up in a very conservative family in rural Indiana, and my parents had very strong expectations and different ideas of what boys and girls should do as well. And so I ended up pretty much being who they wanted me to be all day long, and then kind of sneaking out at night and doing what I wanted to do all night long, which worked for a while, but I kind of ended up sacrificing sleep and sanity trying to live, you know, the dual lives. And it wasn't anything deep and dark and secret, but just, you know, trying to figure out who I was and what I wanted to do. And that was true even when I was teaching. I, you know, just burned the candle at both ends pretty much up until February of 2001. And by that time, I was at the prosecutor's office in Allen County doing felony sex crimes, big murder cases, trial after trial. And it was in February of 2001 that my best friend committed suicide, and also that I just found out I was pregnant very unexpectedly. And so it just came to this point in my life. It's like, wow, I have to decide who I really am and what I want to do with my life. And kind of turned it around from that side. And I would say not only did I start to get some balance, but it really improved my integrity, too, because I am who I am and just coming to accept that.
Wow, that sounds like a pivotal point, if I've ever heard one, in terms of both losing a friend to suicide and finding out you're pregnant. Those are two big life events that seem to have come upon you at about the same time and caused you to rethink some things. That and that might lead us into the second question, which is, what would you consider then to be the biggest challenge or struggle from that point, if that was the pivotal point where you made that conscious decision to do some things differently? What was your biggest challenge or struggle in trying to create that success or trying to find that balance between your work and your life?
I think my biggest shift was in thinking, you know, I think we still live in a man's world. Man's the measure of all things. And I remember thinking as I was pregnant, oh, I really hope I have a boy, because it's just such a tough world for girls. And I kind of always felt like being a girl growing up in rural Indiana was a disability, you know, that you had to do twice as much to be considered half as good or get half as far. And I think that through the course of my pregnancy, you know, I started really taking care of myself for the first time. I started eating right, no smoking, no drinking, no caffeine, anything that wasn't good for me. You know, I hadn't really cared about myself personally up to that time or my own health, but for the child inside of me, you know, I was going to do absolutely everything that I could. And as it turned out, my baby was a little girl, and the most beautiful, perfect little girl you could imagine. And it just kind of dawned on me all of a sudden that, you know what, it is not a disability being a female. It may still be a man's world, but we can start to embrace who we really are and not measure ourselves, you know, by the world standards where everything's competition and those kinds of things, but to just, you know, as I sat and loved my daughter, I kind of learned to love and accept myself.
Wow. That's really powerful. That, I mean, as you stared into the face of that little girl, that it brought you a level of understanding. And like you said, I mean, that's just really beautiful how you said that you came to love yourself more through your expression and experience of love for her.
Yeah, it just kind of healed my own inner child, you know, that there was never really anything wrong with me either, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, my brother and, you know, I think that most of the women that I've seen as successful in the world are women who kind of assume male traits. But I really think that there's a genuine feminine strength. And from that point forward, I've started to embrace that, not just for myself, but for my daughter.
Mm-hmm. I think things change also when we realize that we're a role model for, I have two daughters as well, and that we're modeling for them. And sometimes it makes us step up ourselves just because of we're conscious of what we want to model for them, even when it scares us a little bit.
I agree. And, you know, we've come a long way. We really have. But I still think that in the world, you know, monetary value goes on what men do best, and we still tend to devalue the things that women do well. We have to, you know, we still have that reasonable man standard, and we have to be able to prove everything or it's not true, as opposed to, you know, I think that we really do have intuition and a deeper knowing of some things that you can't necessarily prove, even if you can articulate them. But we live in a world where, I mean, health insurance still pays, you know, will pay for Viagra for men, but it still won't pay for birth control for women. Mm-hmm. You know, and we just naturally expect to pay more to a plumber to fix our toilet than what we're going to pay for child care or, you know, teachers. And it's just, it's still a kind of backward world, I think.
It is. It is. And yet I think we're seeing reasons for hope, but like you said, there are still many vestiges out there where we can see where things still have a lot of room for improvement. And I think that's why it's so important to have women out there, be it in the legal field, because lawyers are often leaders in their communities, in the way the laws are shaped, in those sorts of areas, or doing the work that you're doing, finding other ways to be a leader and demonstrate a different way of being a leader, a way of showing up that does have a feminine aspect to it, that there are aspects of both femininity and masculinity that are leadership, and not one is better than the other. So I applaud you for being a leader in the way you have been in the legal community and in the way you're stepping out now into, it sounds like, these different areas and being a leader in those areas as well. And I think the more we as women can be, show ourselves and act as leaders in the community, the tide will continue to shift.
And then when I think about what our daughters will do in this world, I think that there is definitely hope and that change is on the horizon.
I completely agree. I think there's so much to be hopeful for, especially with that next generation of young women growing up right now who don't feel some of the same dichotomy that maybe our generation or the generation before certainly felt with between men and women. They're just growing up with a different paradigm of hopefully as close to true equality as we've experienced so far societally, and they don't know that they can't do anything and be anything, at least hopefully most of them don't. So I think that'll make a big difference, as you explained, how you felt growing up. Hopefully our girls and girls growing up in today's society will be a lot less likely to experience that sort of stereotypical gender role expectation growing up.
Right. I think that, you know, my daughter's self-concept and self-esteem will just be so much stronger than mine was. And going out, you know, I mean, I think where I grew up, I think everybody grows up with some version of the golden rule, you know, to love your neighbor as yourself. And for women, where I grew up, that was always supposed to be like a self-sacrifice kind of thing. You just give and give and give and give. But really, when I started looking at it again through my daughter's eyes almost, you know, loving your neighbor as yourself is loving yourself. And if you don't love yourself, you can't love your neighbor.
That's exactly. I couldn't agree more, and I think when we can remember that sort of part of the golden rule, and I'm so glad you brought it up, that it does start with loving ourselves, and then we love others, that we're really through that golden rule, however it comes to you in your faith tradition, it's about starting with loving yourself and then loving others, and it's instructing you to really love yourself first, not just sacrificing yourself for others. So that's a beautiful point and a wonderful reminder. Let's move into then, and it sounds like we might have sort of segued a little bit, but I'm wondering what your biggest lesson then along this varied journey that you've had in your personal and professional life, what your biggest lesson or teaching along that journey, what you would call that or name that.
I think that my biggest lesson has been learning to value cooperation over competition. I mean, I think that's still part of the men's world, is we're out here to compete in capitalism. We live in this zero-sum world, and we need to get as much as we can for ourselves and our loved ones. But every time we set up a competition, Somebody has to be right and somebody has to be wrong. Somebody has to win and somebody has to lose. And the competitive mind frame that we have guarantees us that we're going to have losers in the world and that we're going to end up with, like, you know, another revolution, because revolution is like a revolving door. And that if we could get to cooperation, where we can actually have win-win situations, I think as a society we would move more toward evolution and see less violence and fewer revolutions. We just wouldn't need them as much.
That is a beautiful point in terms of, and it goes back, I think, in some ways to a feminine versus a masculine model of doing things. I certainly don't want to become too stereotypical, but I think women, by our nature, seek out that cooperation and that community in a way where men, stereotypically, and again, I certainly don't want to overgeneralize because there are a lot of fantastic men out there who are incredibly cooperative, but there is more of that historically. We can see that competition mentality, and as things continue to evolve in the ways we've been speaking about in terms of feminine leadership, I hope that that's another place where we see cooperation being the paradigm, being the goal or the gold standard of how we look at resolving conflict or even just showing up together in the world, that we can work side by side, and even where others in the past might have seen it as competitive, we can collaborate and work together to find ways to complement one another. And in the end, like you said, we can avoid a lot of conflict, a lot of pain, a lot of other things that pull us backwards in relationships or in society, and like you mentioned, instead move forward and create win-win solutions, if that doesn't sound too trite, but finding ways to collaborate so that everybody does come out of a situation feeling good about the result.
Well, and I think what we find when we do that, when we really connect and when we really cooperate, we tap into the most amazing creative energies. And I think, you know, if you think of society in the yin and the yang sense, I think that the feminine is a creative energy. I mean, that's where, you know, we give birth. I think, you know, I've often thought that if men gave birth, you'd get paid a really lot of money to do that, as much as your top athletes. But, you know, again, it's kind of backwards. But I do think that there is a creative energy there, that we don't have to compete. You know, there are so many things that we value today that didn't exist 100 years ago. You know, 100 years ago, nobody was talking about buying airspace and you couldn't do all these different waves and everything, you know, and people pay money for things that we didn't even know existed 100 years ago. And it's not because, you know, it's not like there's just so much out there and we have to fight for it. I think when we work together, we really can create enough for everybody.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's the only way that we can. When you think about even, you know, thinking about the larger world, ways that we can serve others across the world and alleviate some of the suffering, it's only when we actually come together that we can do that. Because individually, or when there's fighting amongst people or governments, that doesn't get the job done and it doesn't alleviate the problems. But when we can work collaboratively and together, that's when we actually stand a chance of having some success, of seeing some results. It's really sometimes the only way to see that. And I hope to continue to see that way of thinking become more pervasive in at levels of leadership and decision making.
Yeah, because overpowering someone or making someone do something doesn't resolve the conflict or doesn't resolve the problem. It just puts it, you know, down to fester until it comes up again.
Exactly. Exactly. Ah, wow. This is big stuff we're talking about. We're talking about change in the world, which is always a good thing. And you doing it in a way that, again, I don't think it's a Pollyanna-ish way of thinking. I think it's a warm and kind-hearted but strategic way of getting to result. And it's not just trying to gloss everything over with sugar and honey. It's really saying, what is a better way of getting things done? And I think it's so true that spirit of cooperation and of mutual respect gets results, where a spirit of competition and scarcity and fighting and violence does not get to the results that we're looking for. So I think it's both feels better from an integrity standpoint, as you mentioned earlier, and it also actually gets results where other methods have not gotten results in the past.
Well, and let me just, for you mentioned Pollyanna. I do want to emphasize that for the last 10 years, I really have been dealing with child molesters and rapists and murderers and, you know, seeing kind of the worst of what's out there in our world. And so I don't think that, you know, just hold a good thought and is enough. I mean, I really think you have to embrace the whole of humanity, light and darkness, yin and yang, all together. But our justice system is set up very adversarially. Mm-hmm. And one of the last few years, I kind of moved into some less adversarial areas. For example, the drug court, dealing with drug addicts by helping them to deal with their addiction and get to the root of their problems instead of just criminalizing their conduct and locking them up. And dealing with juveniles who, you know, have the ability, hopefully, for rehabilitation as opposed to just, you know, putting them right on the fast track to be a criminal for the rest of their lives. And I would like to see our justice system and society as a whole become more non-adversarial, which goes back to the cooperation, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. And I think it's just a new way of thinking about things that hopefully will become more and more pervasive as people like you, like me, realize that that is actually a better way, a kinder way, a more humane and a more effective way of getting things done. And to talk about Pollyanna, it's funny because as you brought that up again, I grew up watching that movie over and over again when I was younger, and we use it as sort of a joke in society as Pollyanna, as if Pollyanna was naive or just didn't look at the bad. But I always remember that, and I won't get the line correct, but it's the idea that when you look for the bad in things, you'll find the bad, and when you look for the good in things, you'll find the good. And I think it goes back to some of that restorative justice, what you're talking about, not glossing over the bad and ignoring the bad, but looking for the good sometimes actually helps us find the good in a situation that is there, but that if we're not actually looking for it, sometimes we miss.
Right, I think, and well, in Pollyanna, I mean, I reread the book a couple years ago. She was in some pretty bad circumstances, mm-hmm. you know, orphaned and not well and everything that happened. But I do think that when you have hope and when you're grateful for the good things that you have in your life, it's like it's a seed that just grows and takes over, and that when you do put your energy into that positive side, that good things happen and grow from that.
That's right. That's right. So I don't know. Sometimes we make fun of poor Pollyanna, but I think it's a pretty good way of approaching life and approaching adversity. It's more deeply philosophical and powerful than I think people give poor Pollyanna credit for.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, let's move then, Lori, into thinking about some of the top strategies and tips that you would share with folks listening to this recording or reading these words. What would be some of the ways that you would like to share that you have found to be useful to you in terms of creating personal and professional success?
I think the most important thing is, while it's great to have role models and it's great to have mentors, you really have to be yourself. I mean, show up, do your best, give your work your full intention. And one of the things that I love most about being a lawyer is I am getting paid to think. And I think when you get to the place that you can think for yourself and you really do have confidence in your ability to analyze and think for yourself, that you become a positive force in the world. I mean, there's just nothing more useless than a mind filled with somebody else's thoughts, you know? I mean, that's just clutter. Your mind is there to work and to think. And so I think be yourself and think. And then I think, you know, for me it was don't take yourself too seriously, but at the same time don't fall into that self-deprecation where, you know, it's like, well, I'm not as good as anybody else, or I'm not, you know, I'm a second-class citizen somehow because I'm a woman instead of a man. And I think women do that, that, you know, we don't even know how to take a compliment. Somebody says something and then you say, oh, well, you know, it wasn't that good, or you probably could have done it better. And I think one of the best things that my first mentor taught me was when someone gives you a compliment, Lori, just say thank you and move on. You know, and don't spend too much time thinking about it either way, because it may be true or it may not be true, but accept it and move on. And then I think the final thing for me really is understanding the difference between prosperity and wealth. And just prosperity is a flow, and let things come and go from your life. And my daughter, if you ask her what prosperity means, and she's 8 years old, she's in second grade, she'll say, prosperity means we have everything we need and enough to share with others. And if you're not sharing with others, if you're not passing it on and letting good things come out of you, there's not room for more good things to come in. And so I would just say, well, you know, actually I was training my replacement on the juvenile sex offenses, and I gave her a book by, Don Miguel Ruiz, called The Four Agreements.
Wonderful
and I think
book. Wonderful
anybody
book.
Practicing law, if you take those four agreements and you live by them, and now I should have had that in front of me, but I don't, but I'm thinking it's, you know, one of them is always do your best. I think one of them is don't take anything personally, don't make assumptions, and be impeccable with your word. Those four things. So regardless of what faith tradition you come from, I think this is ancient Toltec wisdom, but it speaks to any one of us, and that's how to be a good lawyer. If you do those four things, you're going to be one of the best lawyers in town.
Okay, and you're going to sleep well at night, too.
Well, I don't know. I'm still working on that one.
Well,
my husband adores, and my daughter gets up in the middle of the night.
In your conscience, maybe other things will interfere, but at least from
you
a,
are awake.
Spiritual
right.
place.
Very good.
No, it's that is a fabulous book and wonderful advice that, well, and certainly all 3 points that you made, but like you said, with that book, and I'll be sure to reference that too so folks can find it if they're looking for it. It is fabulous, and it sounds so simple, but they're very challenging agreements or instructions or philosophies. Very challenging to do, but when you do them, like you said, whatever profession you're in, but certainly lawyers, we can accomplish those things. We will not only be an outstanding lawyer, but an outstanding leader and an outstanding individual. And I also, just to touch on the other two that you, the other three kind of that you mentioned, but about being yourself and not taking yourself too seriously, but also not self-deprecating, not beating yourself up too much, accepting the gratitude and the thanks and the praise that others give you without caveat. And also, I love what your daughter would say, and it sounds like she had a good role model in you to teach her that about prosperity and what it really means. And it's about having what we need and having that ability to share with others. And that's lovely. I think I'm going to pass that along to my children, too. I think that's a beautiful way to think about it. Well, Lori, let's move then. That's really what I have for questions. I'd love to give you an opportunity to tell a little bit more about what you have cooking up, because it sounds like you've made some big transitions in the last just couple months here recently. And I'd love to hear more about those and where readers and listeners could find out more about your work.
Well, I have. I've made a big change in my life effective May 1st. I'm no longer prosecuting. I took that, you know, I wore that hat for 10 years, and I just feel like it's time to put the politics and fighting, you know, within the system aside and seeing if there's another way to become the change that I want to see in the world. And I think that there are probably a couple different ways that I'm doing that. You can find out about all of them on my website, www.socraticparenting.com. And the first idea that I had, you know, with when my daughter was young was, wow, parenting, you know, it's like the two things that nobody ever trains you to do that everybody has to deal with is nobody trains you to be a parent and nobody tells you how to deal with change. And so I've had this idea for Socratic Parenting for some time, and I haven't actually gotten that book written yet. But I did work on Token of Change, and you'll see that on my website. And what Token of Change is it's a coin and a magnet set that utilizes the affirmation. It's just a short affirmation poem. It goes, I am grateful, I am kind, I create what's on my mind, perfect health, prosperity, my world reflects the change in me. And it's just really that has been the most effective tool for change that I've had in my life. And so I've done some workshops on that, and I've got like thousands of them, and you can figure out how to contact me if you want one, and I'll be happy to sell one to you because I'm doing that. And my first book is out this month, May 15th officially, but I've already done some signings and stuff because it's kind of out there. It's called Summer Sanctuary, and it's really a book for tweens and teens. It's about Matthew's a 12-year-old homeschooled preacher's kid who goes to the library to work on this science project that he's doing for himself because he's got this theory that, you know, if God is light and 1,000 years is like a day to God, that's really Einstein's theory of relativity and time dilation in the Bible. And so he's got this idea that he's going to prove that what Einstein proved was actually already in the Bible. He gets a little sidetracked while he's at the library because he sees this girl who's homeless for the summer, and he persuades her to live in the basement of his church secretly for the summer. And the sanctuary is the place where they kind of connect through music. He plays the piano, she plays the harmonica. But there's also the concept of sanctuary where the girl, Dinah, her biggest fear is that somebody's going to call child welfare and she's going to end up in a foster home. She's never going to get back to be with her mom, and that's where she really wants to be. So there's that concept of sanctuary, but I also think that the greatest sanctuary in the book is the friendship that these two people from totally different worlds, you know, she came to the library because it was a safe place, and she's just looking for a safe place. But their ability to get to know each other and to really learn about themselves in the safety of that friendship. And so that book is out. And, you know, it's one of those books that it's a good read. My 8-year-old is reading it. There's no profanity. There's nothing explicit. But there are some mature themes. So I would say it's kind of PG for 8, 9, and 9-year-olds especially. But, you know, I've got readers from 8 to 93 who are loving it. So, and I've got another young adult book that I've written that's more philosophical and metaphysical and for a little bit older. And then I'm working on my third novel, and I'm spending time doing teaching and instructing. I really like the opportunity to work with kids and to encourage them, you know, to be who they are, have confidence and think for yourselves. Know that even when people tell you the teenage years are their best years, you know, they really aren't. 20s are really better than being a teenager because you have your own money and your own independence, and 30s are even better, and 40s are even better. But I try not to do that with teenagers because they already think I'm old. So
yeah.
That's pretty much what I've been doing. More teaching. You know, I spoke at the last national symposium, or the last two national symposiums on child abuse, and I talked to the director and said, you know what, I'm not going to be a prosecutor anymore. And she's like, oh, but you can still come and teach. And so I'm planning on doing that. And, you know, author visits, library visits, and just meeting kids where they are and encouraging them to become all they can be.
Wow. Wow, that's wonderful. And I just clicked into it. It looks like most of this can be found at SocraticParenting.com, correct? Is that sort of your home space?
It can.
Okay. It's beautiful, and it's just as you're saying all of that, it sounds like you truly have lived out that those words of your world reflecting the change in you and your journey, your amazing journey throughout your entire life and to what you've now come to in this most recent iteration of everything that you're doing. It's beautiful, and it just feels like, you know, you've found something that lights you up and that you can do that brings you joy and makes a huge difference in the lives of people that you touch. So I just want to congratulate you on that, and I'm going to definitely do some more reading on your website, and the book sounds wonderful. I might have to, my girls are a little young for it right now, it sounds like, but in a few years I'll pick up a copy for them as well. So thank you for sharing all of that wonderful information. I encourage everyone to check out Lori's website at SocraticParenting.com. Lori, do you have any final thoughts or anything before we wrap up for this time together?
Well, there is one other link on my website that I want to bring to your attention, just because one of the things that I've been doing over the last 2 years is working as a consultant for Sophie's Cafe. The website for that is www.sophiescafe.org, but it's really an empowerment group for women. When I was doing the drug court, a lot of women were court-ordered to attend, you know, like 7 meetings in 7 days, and most of their meetings were either at churches or AA meetings, NA meetings, you know. And the AA and the NA meetings were really designed by men, for men, and they're all about abstinence. And so many of women's issues are really about boundaries instead of abstinence. I mean, women sometimes have issue with food, and you can't just stop eating. You have to eat. You can't just abstain from it like you can alcohol or shopping. You know, you can't just never buy anything again, or relationships. And so I would really encourage people to check out sophiescafe.org. Also, now that I'm not a prosecutor and not in an you know, I could actually go to the meetings and not have to Mirandize someone. That's something that I hope to spend more time doing as well, because I really think that if we're going to change the world, we should probably start with the women and the children, and that's my goal.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're doing it, so congratulations. And I just want to reiterate, Sophie's Cafe, it's SOPHIESCAFE.org. Is that correct?
That's correct, and there's a link on my Socratic Parenting website.
Great.
To that as well.
Great. It sounds like amazing work as well. Lori, this has just been incredible, so deep and so powerful, and yet you, watching you, and I know you mentioned that it's great to have role models, but people should be themselves, and I completely agree, but I also thank you for being a role model to others, to women who may just find themselves wanting to stretch beyond a legal career into something else that really feeds them. Or maybe they want to split their time between legal practice and doing some writing or doing some other work that is meaningful. And you and watching you and seeing your example will really allow them the freedom to think outside the box, so to speak, into work that maybe draws upon their experience, their legal experience, but also builds upon it in a deeper way. So I do thank you for being that model that allows other people to be themselves.
Thank you, Kendra. This has been my pleasure.
It's wonderful to have you. So with that, I reluctantly end the conversation, but I do thank you for your time. And again, I encourage everyone who's listening or reading to learn more about Lori and her work at SocraticParenting.com, where there is a wealth of information, links, recommendations, and more information about Lori and what she's doing. So again, I thank you, Lori, and I thank everyone who's here with us today listening or reading. I wish you all the best. I hope that you have learned some things about yourself, about the possibilities, about just some ways to be, to show up in a way that creates your own version of personal and professional success. So until next time, this is Kendra Brodine wishing you real success always in all ways. Thank you so much for being here.